Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jo Freeman, an American feminist, political scientist, writer, and attorney. As a student at the University of California, Berkeley in the 1960s, she became active in organizations working for civil liberties and the civil rights movement. She went on to do voter registration and community organization in Alabama and Mississippi and was an early organizer of the women's liberation movement. She has authored several classic feminist books and articles, as well as important papers on social movements and political parties. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jo Freeman.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
And these elections, of course, brought in a number of women into and minorities into the House of Representatives and into the United States Senate. In fact, the entire makeup of representatives in the state of New Hampshire appear to be almost entirely women. So how do you feel about these results in terms of America turning blue and getting bluer in the future?
Well, first of all, this was definitely a very good year for women. We increased our representation in the House, in the Senate, and generally throughout. It's usually a good year for women when it's a year that ends in two, and it's usually a good year for women running for office when the Democrats do well. The Democrats did well. They didn't do as well as they perhaps could have, but they did better than most people expected them to do. So the American people essentially said that they wanted more progressivism in their policies than they've been experiencing in the past. They did not reverse the Republican ascendancy in the House. That is still going to be a problem. But they gave us a few more Democrats to work with than we had before.
Now, what do you make then of this idea that the our politics have moved so far to the right, the Republican Party has moved so far to the right that even a lot of Republicans are alarmed by the direction it's taken. And I mentioned the recriminations that are going on now. But the Democratic Party has also moved to the right as well, inexorably.
Well, I'm not so sure I agree with you on that.
Well, I was going to say, though, that the public in this last election appears to be showing that they're moving to the left. So are our politics out of sync with the public? That was my question.
Okay. Well, first of all, a little overview here. Actually, I got to give two overviews. One, if you look at political polarization, the higher you go in the hierarchy, the greater is the degree of polarization. So, for example, members of Congress, very polarized. Party people who work for candidates, general political activists, polarized, but not to the extremes of Congress. You work your way down to the ordinary American voter, and you don't see the same degree of polarization that you do in Congress. So this movement of left to right, right to left, doesn't mean quite the same thing on the ordinary citizen level as it does, say, on the congressional level. Secondly, if you look at how people have been responding in the last few years, what you get is a series of votes that basically said no. In 2006, the voters rejected what had been a Republican majority in Congress and elected a Democratic majority, making Nancy Pelosi an historic first as Speaker of the House. They said no to what was happening in the country. 2008, they elected a Democratic president, rejected a Republican president, re-elected a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate. Once again, they said no. 2010, they also said no, but this time they rejected the Democrats and elected an overwhelming number of Republicans. 2012, they didn't make a move in either direction to the same degree they had in the previous three elections. They moved slightly left. They gave the Democrats a few more senators. They gave them a few more members of Congress. Obama won, but we should understand that the political prognostications that are made months in advance predicted that he would win. He did a little bit better than those prognostications would have predicted. But it was his election to lose, and he didn't lose it. So it's stretching it to say the American people are moving to the left. They're basically saying, we don't like what's been going on. We're looking for something different and something new. And they keep saying no to the Democrats and no to the Republicans. This election, they gave a little qualified yes to the Democrats. It's not a big move in a blue direction.
So, Joe Freeman, but in these midterm elections, in the last one, of course, 2010, that was a blowout for the Republicans, and it's led to the sort of Tea Party takeover, if you will, of the Republican Party and the Republican House. My sense, and of course, the biggest donors, a lot of that was organized by Karl Rove, and the biggest donors were the American Petroleum Institute, and Karl Rove and others immediately got to working on the 2012 election, having installed a bunch of Republican governors in key swing states like Ohio. They set about through ALEC their voter suppression plans, and we know from the statistics in this recent election that the Democrats in the House got more votes from American people than the Republicans did, even though the Republicans have a substantial majority. So they've seriously gerrymandered the House. My sense.
That's what happens when you lose in a reapportionment year.
Exactly.
We're going to pay for that for the next 10 years.
Right. But doesn't this mean the fact that in this election, because it's a presidential election, more people showed up? My sense is that President Obama is going to have to campaign real hard in 2014 so that the Democrats can avoid another 2010.
Yes, he will. And he's going to have to show some successes, too, which the Tea Party Republican caucus is not going to want to let him do. They're going to do their best to make him look bad. One of the unfortunate aspects of current American politics, or should I say the current Republican Party, and I'm comparing this to previous Republican parties under previous Democratic administrations, the current Republican Party in the House is less concerned with making policy, even policies they like, than they are with defeating the Democratic president. So they basically will go out of their way to make the Democratic president look bad, even if it sometimes means shooting themselves in the foot. That's what they've been doing the last 2 years, and they're going to keep doing it for the next two.
So what's your sense then, Joe Freeman, of whether this is a permanent, or this is the beginning of a permanent shift? A lot of Republicans are alarmed that they're not going to be able to sustain themselves over the long run if they continue to alienate women and minorities, the fastest growing group being Latinos. We can see what's going on in Arizona, how the old guard white Republicans are doing everything they can to inhibit and suppress the votes of the Latinos. So as long as that goes on, the demographic future of the Republicans doesn't look good, and conversely, it looks brighter for the Democrats. Is that inexorable, or can that change?
Well, it's not inexorable. First of all, you're right. Demographically, it looks better for the Democrats. It has for some time. It's been almost a decade in which the demographics have looked better for the Democrats than they did for the Republicans. And yet the Republicans have won some very big elections in that decade, but it's looked better for the Democrats demographically. So keep in mind, the Republicans can overcome demographics. They have done it in the past. They can keep doing it in the future. They shift on some things when they have to shift. I think we should make a big distinction between social issues and economic issues. The Republican elite, the ones that you point out who are funding a lot of this, they're primarily concerned with economic issues. They don't really care about the social issues. Economically, they want limited government, little or no regulation, and low taxes. They will give in on the social issues to whomever can get them that. There are a strata in the Republican Party for whom the social issues is of primary importance. They're the ones who walk the precincts, work the phone banks, and generally add labor to the money that comes from the elites. But if the elites think they can win without them, if they can find another way to get their economic goals without having to cater to the wishes of the social conservatives, they will. That may happen. That's a little hard to predict. That's probably why the Republican Party is in such turmoil right now, because they're not quite sure whom within their own party they need to work with to get what they want.
Well, but prior to this election, I often was interviewed a number of people and historians and others going back to the Gilded Age, for example, and making connections to the current Gilded Age, and there's been a pervasive sense that, and the use of the word oligarchy and plutonomy has come more and more into our vernacular, and of course the Occupy movement brought in the 99% versus the 1%, and it felt in many ways that this election was a referendum on the extent to which we are still a democracy and haven't totally become a plutocracy or a plutonomy with our polity captured by oligarchs. How do you see that situation, given that many of the plutocrats behind the big super PACs on the Republican side, the Sheldon Adelsons and company, and the Karl Rove's super PACs, in spite of hundreds of millions of dollars, they, you know, didn't win the election. And indeed, I'm sure Karl Rove has to answer to a lot of plutocrats as we speak.
Well, what that tells you is money only gets you so far in elections. I mean, money is an easy thing to talk about because you can count it, you can add it up, you can spend it, you can it's quantifiable. But everyone who studies elections will tell you money only gets you so far. It doesn't. You can't actually buy an election, at least not in the long run. It needs to have multiple elections over time. So that's why they're crying, because as much money as they had, they still couldn't win enough seats in enough places to feel fairly comfortable with that their policies would be pursued. There are other things that count, and we need to hope that our politicians will be able to utilize those things that count. One of which is educating the American people. Now, as Teddy Roosevelt said, the presidency is a bully pulpit. It's still a bully pulpit, only it's a bigger one than it was in his day. I certainly hope President Obama will use the presidency as an opportunity to educate the American people on the need for more progressive policies, the need to raise income tax, and not just on the wealthy. I mean, I really need to raise it on many more income earners than just those earning over $250,000. We need to pay for a lot of things if we're going to fund the programs that make this a society worth living in. He's got to sell that to the American people. The right wing has tried to say everyone should take care of themselves. We don't want government to take care of us. Those who can't afford to pay for it, that's just the way it is. The Republicans want everyone to believe that everyone should take care of themselves and maybe take care of their families, but that's it. So we don't have any other obligations to anyone else. As President Obama said many times, both during the Democratic Convention and afterward, we're all in this together. You look at the theme that was written large on the wall of the Democratic Conventions. It said, Americans coming together. That's the basic message he needs to sell to the American people, that we are all better off if we all contribute to society so that we all can get something out of society. The Republican individualists take a very different tack. They basically want to say everyone should stand up for themselves, everyone should pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, everyone should not be their brother's or their sister's keeper, and if bad things happen to you, look to charity, don't look to government to take care of you. That's their message. Obama needs to use the bully pulpit of the presidency to sell the progressive message, the community message, to the American people if he wants to get his policies actually put into law.
Well, just in closing, Joe Freeman, the union movement, which is down to 6%, representing 6% of the private workforce now, played a very key role, for example, in Ohio, and other progressive organizations weighed in as well. Do you think that there's going to be some kind of quid pro quo here?
There's always a quid pro quo. Don't fool yourselves. I mean, the auto workers came all out for Obama in 2008, and he rescued the auto industry. He didn't do it because he's in love with GM. He did it because he felt an obligation to the United Auto Workers. And, yes, that's exactly what's going to happen with Ohio. Now, keep in mind that labor also went all out in 2010 and got walloped rather soundly in 2010. One of the reasons they were able to be so successful in 2012 is because those reactionary who were elected to Ohio, you know, in Ohio in 2010, went around and put forth some policies which scared the bejeebers out of the Ohio voters. So they were ready to listen to the union message this time. But yes, will Obama be obligated to labor? Will Richard Trump could come knocking on his door and say, this is what we want? Absolutely, that's going to happen. Now, whether he can deliver or not is another matter. You don't get new laws unless they're passed by Congress. And Congress is still controlled by the right-wingers. So we don't know what's going to happen, but we certainly know that there will be a quid pro quo. I wouldn't quite put it a quid pro quo. There's a basic rule in politics. Take care of the people who take care of you. AFL took care of Obama in Ohio, and Obama's going to do his best to take care of the AFL.
Well, Joe Freeman, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Okay, good to talk to you.
Again, I've been speaking with Joe Freeman, who's an American feminist, political scientist, writer, and attorney. As a student at the University of California, Berkeley in the 1960s, she became active in organizations working for civil liberties and the civil rights movement. She went on to do voter registration and community organization in Alabama and Mississippi and was an early organizer of the Women's Liberation Movement. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcast at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me and find answers to questions that a lot of listeners have been sending in lately. And the conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.